Good morning. Oh, sorry. Good morning. You're listening to WMFO in Medford. That's WMFO Medford, Tufts Free Forum, commercial-free, community-based radio. We're a little slice of that community-based socialist alternative radio for the next 2 hours, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. every other Sunday. Talk and music from a working-class democratic socialist perspective. Thanks for listening. And as our previous DJ said, if you're brunching right now, put down your spoons or your forks, because we're getting real here. Oh, yeah, Diego, you're on. Okay. Let's introduce ourselves. Your co-hosts today are Jeff and
Diego.
And great music selection on that last show, by the way.
Can't brunch because of lack of fun.
Yeah. Yeah. What do we do about that? I haven't eaten. Yeah. Well, that's not. Yeah. I guess I am trying to save money, so I guess that fits. Did you have breakfast?
No, I'm doing the European thing where I have a nice lunch.
Yeah.
And then I just, that's it.
Yeah.
If I can, you know, been going church to church.
You know, I do that and I don't lose weight, so I don't know what to do now. But also I do it to save money. Although breakfast is the cheapest meal, you know, if your body can tolerate the eggs and stuff, you know, it's like really the cheapest meal.
Well, and that's where we need, eating eggs all the time is bad for your cholesterol.
That's what they say. But yeah. Then there's also
my grandma used to always say that, because there'd be times that all we would do is eat eggs. But when you're younger, you know, you have a high metabolism.
Yeah, exactly.
And she would always tell me, you're going to get high calorie. You're getting calories. All about the calories.
Yep.
Or the cholesterol, sorry.
Exactly. Well, also, we have to share a secret with our listeners that, you know, we've explained this show before, Socialist Alternative Radio, in case you're just tuning in, as not just sort of, you know, your and there aren't too many of these shows, so I don't want to sound cynical. I like some of them, but we're not just your alternative news show, like your alternative left progressive news show. We're pretty hardcore here. We are revolutionary socialists, and we want people to join the movement. We want you to become socialists. We want you to work for a transformation of society from capitalism to socialism. We really mean that, totally. Democratic socialism. Working people internationally in control of the economy. You know, and everything that flows from that, the political system, culture, et cetera. And that's our goal. And that is a long haul, maybe. We'll see, depending on conditions. But it is certainly intense work. And it certainly means studying and discussing and being active and trying to figure things out. And so what I was getting at was that basically, as we try to encourage you to become activists from a socialist perspective, using Marxism and other tools to liberate humanity, basically, and to save the planet from ecological destruction, and at least for human habitat, and all sorts of other dangers out there to really fundamentally get rid of racism and sexism and so on. All these things that emanate, that are rooted in capitalism and class societies in general. As we try to get you involved in that project, to put it nicely, movement, in that organizing, we have to say, you got to make some time for meetings. You got to make some time for activity. And you know, I know people that consider themselves, left Marxists, but, you know, they spend more time, you know, working out and maintaining a sort of routine, in their lives that, they don't want to break, you know, like I've tried to get them interested in more serious work, political work. And, you know, it's not like you can never work out or have fun or anything. You have to have a balanced life, even as an activist, some sort of a balance. It's just, you also have to try to sacrifice a little bit. And that includes time. And that's what working people don't have, time, you know, we don't have time. So it's a big sacrifice. Granted, it's a huge sacrifice, but it's an important sacrifice. You don't have to be a martyr, but you also can't lay back and just, you know, think you're going to live a routine life. You can live a good life, a fulfilling life. In fact, all the medical studies I've read about recently say if you have a cause in your life, you live longer. And if you, instead of just, you know, so, you know, I would question the workout regimen that is religiously adhered to without also some sort of emotional and intellectual, gut, you know, purpose in life. And so, yeah, you know, I'd be honest up front, you know, if you get interested in socialism and fighting for socialism, which is really the thing that ties all the different issues together and provides a solution to all the problems that we're facing, all the political problems that we're facing, that and that includes economic problems, then you're gonna have to sacrifice a little time. You know, you're gonna miss the workout every once in a while. You're gonna miss the family every once in a while, which really hurts really bad. You're gonna miss the Game of Thrones or something. You know, well, you can catch it later. Stay up late, lose some sleep, like I do. Anyway, it's not, again, not a martyrdom thing, not a guilt trip thing, just a fact. You're gonna sacrifice some time. Hopefully, you'll sacrifice a little money. Hopefully, you'll sacrifice a little, whatever, because you're doing it for other people. You're doing it for the next generation. You're doing it for if you have children, you're doing it for your children. Look what's at stake. Yeah, you're doing it for yourself too. You're right, but look what's at stake. Right now, the Trump administration is just tearing into the working class. You know, Clinton would have done the same thing, but much more subtly and with much more finesse. Trump is in your face. I don't think you're strong enough to fight me going after us, you know, with some reservations. But for the most part, there is some things they haven't tried yet, but the list gets shorter every day. And so going after health care, they're getting some pushback from people, even from some Republicans, even from some people that I imagine voted for Trump. They're fighting back. They're trying to keep Obamacare. As we've talked about on the show before, Obamacare is filled with holes, but it's got little bits that help people, some people, and those some people that got helped, they don't want to give it up now. Sorry, go ahead, Diego.
Now, I have a little thing. You know how Ronald Reagan in the 80s?
Oh, yeah, I remember that really well.
I'm half Salvadorian, so there's this thing in El Salvador news. I don't know if it's rumor or news. Well, usually news, it could be both. But anyway, now Trump is trying to do the same, that Reagan did back then, amnesty, because of the Civil War back in the 80s. Trying to make himself look progressive. Oh, I care about the Salvadorian, you know, because of their situation. I'll give them a visa or something.
El Salvador?
Just Salvadorian. Because now, because of the situation in El Salvador, with MS and everything,
yep.
It's just as equal, or if not worse, than the Civil War.
Right.
Now Trump is trying to do the same thing.
But I think I'm just checking out a fact here. Reagan did a general amnesty for all illegal immigrants in the United States. Is that what you're talking about? Or did he do something specifically for El Salvador?
But he did that in general, he did specifically for El Salvador because of El Salvador. Because at the time he had Nicaragua, and he wanted to counter that propaganda. Back then it was the Cold War, so it was the different politics Cold War era.
Yep.
But, you had a Nicaragua that was already had their semi-revolution. It is, sort of like a Cuba in Central America.
Yep.
And that he needed to let's give some amnesty, look like we're the good guys, we're here for you, we're here for democracy.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, we're going to talk more, if we have time, because we're going to get into the new issue of Socialist Alternative, and there's a really good article on immigration we can riff off of for a discussion on immigration rights. Out of all the attacks that Trump is doing, it's likely that immigrant rights is going to be a huge, maybe the biggest struggle in the short term, especially around May 1st. That could turn into a real, real strike action, real job action, real big protests centered around immigrant rights, but also workers' rights because of what Trump is doing.
Remember 2010?
I hope so. That'll be hard. Yeah, I remember that. 2006, I think you're thinking of.
No, it was 2010. You and me were there.
The day without an immigrant?
I remember that day. You and me were there at the march over by Government Center, and all the drunk guys like, "You're not American, get out of America." Remember?
I do remember that, but wasn't there... That was one May Day, but wasn't the big Day Without an Immigrant 2006?
There was one in 2006. There was another...
Excuse me.
We were protesting against a particular bill that was going to pass, 1070 or something like that, that was going to be basically backwards, going backwards.
I remember that. The thing with immigration, just that's always a little tricky, is that... Oh, by the way, one other thing about... I'll leave that for later. one thing that's tricky about immigration is that the sections of the capitalist class in this country are absolutely dependent on immigrant workers. They love the idea of having an additional stick to hold against the worker, which is the threat of deportation. and they use it mercilessly. And workers that are desperate for work still need the jobs, you know? And so that brings up a couple things. One is that they want immigrants still coming in, you know? So this whole thing about keep every immigrant out, that's just raw meat for the really ignorant Trump supporters. And it doesn't match reality. And the other thing is that workers that aren't immigrants, and I've seen this even among recent immigrants that are now legal, they get this attitude towards immigrants like, you're driving down wages and all that, but who does the hiring? Who sets the wages? Come on. What I see in the immigrant community is more interest in unions than I see in the non-immigrant community. What I see in the immigrant community is some immigrants, at least, bringing in traditions of socialism that are weaker here than they are in their home countries.
That's like yesterday. I went into a burger place in Central Square to put an application. The Brazilian guy, he's like, oh, no, they're hiring at such and such. And I said, well, she just said that you guys are hiring.
Yeah.
She was like, oh, right now we're in the freeze. So I do the application and everything, hand it. He takes it right away. I go, oh, yeah, he's going to put it in the wastebasket.
So and why he's telling was he, me to why go down so to
veggie. I don't know. Job security.
Maybe he wants
I guess.
To get his cousin a job.
Job
or something.
Security.
I don't know.
Exactly.
That's nasty.
So one lady's telling me one thing, he's telling me the other, and he's grabbing the application. It's like intent, waiting for me to finish it.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, I'll take that. Thank you.
That happened to me. Yeah. That happened to me big time. I had a angle on a job. I don't know if it would have been any better than the job I had, really, but it was different. Probably I would have been out of the Harvard loop, which might have been good. Yeah, one person for their own internal reasons at the company that wanted me was like friends with the person that got from Harvard that told me about this part-time job. So they didn't want to be seen as stealing, but the other person in the company wanted me to be there and blah, 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 you know, so I didn't get the job. But, and I think about it because I wonder what would have happened if I'd taken that path, really. Yeah, hold on one second. I'm just doing a little business here. So, today's show, again, we always run out of time, so we'll probably get to half of this, but new issue of Socialist Alternative. Thought we could talk about some of that. The Socialist Alternative is both a political socialist organization. Go to socialistalternative.org for more information. And Socialist Alternative is the newspaper of Socialist Alternative. We're looking at issue number 31, March 2017. And I like, picture this cover. Escalate the resistance. That means the resistance against Trump, obviously. And also, toward a nationwide strike on May 1st. Let's talk about that for a second.
Like France. Viva la France.
Yeah, like France. Like all those countries that do that stuff.
They do it
stuff,
on a regular basis. They're doing it like every other weekend.
Right, right. So, now, oftentimes, especially if you're a longtime listener to the show, and we do have some, thank you very much, longtime listeners. And this show, by the way, goes out nationally, internationally, because of the wonders of the internet. We are based here in Somerville/Medford/Greater Boston, Massachusetts, United States of America, planet Earth, etc. So anyway.
Center of the galaxy, Milky Way.
Yeah, Milky Way, right.
left quadrant.
So we have... said before, you know, we've tried to not throw the strike word around kind of in a way that's not real, a way that might be a bit ultra left, a way that is just like, wow, it sounds good, call for a strike, you know? We try to avoid that. A lot of members of Social Alternative are in unions, and we know how hard it is to organize something like a strike. And I've been on strike myself, and I know it's difficult. And so to have a general strike, we have all these unions cooperating. And frankly, any decent union leader has to be left-wing. They just have to be against the system, have a vision, have a way to inspire people, understand what they're doing as part of a bigger movement, etc. There are very few union leaders like that now. Very, very few. And the ones that are kind of underground about it, which is bad. Most union leaders are, I think, ready to give it up. Basically, they're just ready to retire, you know? And I wish they would. I wish they would get out of the way. Because I think there's a new generation of workers that need unions desperately and to be as part of a social movement, as part of a socialist movement, basically. Not that a union is a socialist or anything, but a union can be part of a socialist movement, needs to be stronger. So we have a situation where this year, in Socialist Alternative, if you read our material, if you talk to people in Socialist Alternative, if you listen to our speeches, like of Shama Sawant, for example, who is an elected city councilor in Seattle, who I'm a member of Socialist Alternative, re-elected twice, actually. We're now talking about a general strike on May 1st, the possibilities of that. We're trying to define it a little bit. Go to socialistalternative.org for more detailed information. And what we're basing this on is there's the general strike term, or the word strike, and especially general strike, is getting out there more, ironically, outside of unions. Now, that's a little strange, but let's think about the pathway here. First of all, is what we already talked about, Diego, is 2006. That was a kind of a general strike, although it was confined mostly to Latino workers in certain cities. But it was huge, and it was very effective. It stopped this bill from going through. It was very, very effective. What was not good about it, and this is still a real danger, is it all got sucked into the Democratic Party afterwards.
Yeah, the organizations I know is like Centro Presente and everything. Let's go, yeah. You know, the Democrats, the liberals.
Yep.
They hijacked it. Because imagine the education, you know, just on that. Yep. Oh, we did it once. Why can't we do it again?
Exactly.
And again and
exactly.
again. And that's basically the norm in other countries.
And what happened was, I have to be honest, because we had discussions with the people that in L.A. that started the whole thing going. They were a very small left group of Latinos in L.A., and they got the whole thing off the ground because they just hit the issue just right. And there's sometimes when that happens. We experienced it recently in Socialist Alternative. Well, right after the Trump election, we said, okay, we got to demonstrate. Let's boom. And we did demonstrations in different cities initiated by Socialist Alternative that turned into demonstrations of thousands and tens of thousands and hundreds in small cities where you'd expect 50 or something. And that was an example of that. There's other examples of that, but it doesn't usually happen. You don't usually hit the issue right when people are really angry and they're focused and they're looking around to do something. That's kind of, unfortunately, hard to do. Mm. 2006, it happened. Small group got in touch with other groups. Small groups led this huge strike, you know. And SEIU was involved, got on board and was involved, and it turned into a really good thing. We were involved in our limited way in Socialist Alternative at the time. Then you had Occupy. Occupy used the terminology of striking and strikes and all that. Even though they weren't real strikes, they did get an echo in some places, and you actually had some workers walking off their jobs and stuff. It was very disorganized, but it was something, you know, something like...
A lot more schools were doing that.
Schools, student walkouts, yeah. Brilliant student
Big
walkouts,
time.
Yeah. And the rallies were good and stuff like that. So Occupy had moments of not really a general strike, but kind of like, you know, close. And now, since the labor movement is getting weaker and the leaders are getting... many of them just more conservative. They can't see beyond the Democratic Party. They prop up the elites of the Democratic Party. They're afraid to call things like a general strike or whatever. And there are exceptions of really good strikes that have happened, like the Chicago Teachers Union strike, the dining hall worker strike at Harvard last year, or was it that early? Yeah, last year.
Yeah, early last year.
There's other examples that just skip my mind, but these are
Chicago
like...
Chicago window, what was that window?
That was a while ago, yeah. But yeah, you're right. The occupation when in Obama's first term.
2009, yeah.
Yeah, Chicago window and doors led by one of my old unions, United Electrical Workers. But that's, none of that reaches still doesn't reach the height of general strike. And also, every time you have like a big thing like that happen, it can easily retreat. Like the Chicago Teachers Union right now, I'm hearing mixed things about, like, they're getting closer to Rahm Emanuel, if you can believe it, which is this horrible mayor in Chicago, horrible Democratic Party mayor in Chicago. They're sucking up to him. But at the same time, I just read something that they're trying to organize a big charter school or charter schools in Chicago. So I have to check more into that.
You know, there's a series about that, almost about like him. It's called Boss. Have you seen that?
No. What's it called?
It's called Boss.
Boss.
And you know who plays the guy?
Oh, God. What do you mean? He's
like the mayor of Chicago.
A TV show?
Yeah, he's like the mayor of Chicago.
Oh,
he's real
God.
Ruthless, and he's all a pro-business. You know, basically what probably this guy's all about, you know?
Well, I'll tell you, man.
But it's called Boss, and guess who plays the guy? You know the guy that played Frasier?
Yeah. Him. He's a right-winger, too, in real life.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you know, the thing is about Rahm Emanuel, it's actually worse than anything they could put on TV. He's actually worse than that. The number of kids dying in Chicago based on the kind of
gang violence.
But gang violence based on a rotten economy. You know, Rahm Emanuel has the power, like any mayor, to say, hey, we're going to start a public works program tomorrow, you know, and we're going to hire people in communities to do everything from paint to clean to do infrastructure, get some training through the unions. He could do a thing with
centers,
the unions. Yeah, exactly. Yep. He could do things with the unions. You provide training to these people. You know, we'll give you the contract for this or that job.
That's like an example. Cambridge has less crime because of those youth centers. People, mm-hmm. These kids are occupied. They got places to go where mm-hmm. places like Dorchester's far and few between.
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing, I think you're right about that, but one thing about Cambridge is also it's really gentrified up. I mean, the thing about Cambridge is there's a lot of public housing still, so the gentrification has been really bad, but there still hasn't forced everyone out. Mm-hmm. But,
you know... Let's get in there.
I think of, like... I just think of places like... you know, Brockton and
Chelsea,
places that people get forced out to, East Boston, I used to live in Cambridge, now I live here. You know, that's
those places gentrified. Look at Mission Hill, one time used to be, and then you have
Mission Hill gentrified.
Southie, yep. Now it's gentrified. Southie's, you got places gentrified. In Southie I couldn't even walk through in the 90s because I was Hispanic.
Yeah,
and now you just see, whoa, who are you, Mr. Joe Schmo from a new upper state New York, whatever, you know. Yeah,
that's where I'm from.
Oh, I'm sorry. No pun intended.
I'm from Schenectady.
Like,
I know what you mean.
But you know, they got these high class condominiums coming in.
Used to be
factories or whatever by the waterfront. Now those are condominiums.
I used to go.
Or lofts.
You know,
Wally's. Sorry, let me call it. It's a loft.
You know Wally's, right? That jazz place down there, and the pizza place, New York Pizza.
Yes, right,
that
on Mass
corner.
Yep.
Yeah, I used to go to that corner a lot. And then there was that Radical Bookstore used to be near there for a while, Lucy Parsons. So I'd go down there, and then also we used to sell the paper sometimes at the. At the T stop near there, I forget the name of it. The Orange Line one.
Ruggles.
Yeah, I think. Nah, the one's up on the hill, sort of. Near
Mass Ave. Yeah.
Near, I think it's called Mass Ave. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
So it's near the Huntington, you know, near the Symphony.
Near the Pops.
Yeah. So I was hanging around there in the 80s and 90s, and off and on. It was rough. You know, I remember getting yelled at a couple times. For being white, and you know, so some of the stores there, you know, people would be hanging out, you know, and they just yell shit, you know, and stuff, and so yeah, it was rougher. And now there's still public housing down there, you know, and good public housing too. Remember the tent city struggle? That was really good, and it was brilliant, led by Mel King back in the 80s.
Well, I wasn't here in the Houston.
You were young too. You're younger too.
I was born in a hot climate, Houston.
Yeah, South
muggy.
End had a good struggles. Had good struggles, but now
I was
it's
scared.
Like yeah. Now it's like
I only
gentrified.
Stuck to my family because everybody was weird. Yeehaw! And cowboy boots. I'm serious. They had cowboy hats and boots.
I've heard though. Okay. You told me about that about Houston, but I know someone else from Houston or spent some time in Houston. And to me, Houston from that person who's younger sounds very kind of urban, really kind of
well,
like a normal
urban
city.
Area.
Yeah, yeah. I've never been there.
And it's growing. Now it's bigger than.
Yeah, yeah. It's huge.
It's not what it was when I was living there.
Yeah, yeah.
But we were living in the Fifth Ward, South Park area. If you know Ghetto Boys, the rap group, that's where they're from.
No, I don't know that. Yeah.
That was like the South Central of L.A., almost.
But
like.
This is Houston.
This is just in the 80s. It was just Crips, Bloods, and Crips, just like anything else.
Yeah.
Mexican mafia. And
It's funny because it sounds like we're doing this thing where gentrification makes the place safer. And in a way, it does because more cops will be down there guarding the rich people, you know. But that's not what we mean because, like, parts of the South End, I didn't mean to say the whole South End was dangerous back in the 80s. It wasn't, you know. There were parts that weren't, and part of it was where it was organized that's and like, where it wasn't, you know?
It's like Washington now. These places in the 80s that you couldn't even walk down the street in the 80s. You weren't even thinking about it.
Yeah.
Now it's like beautiful, nice, you know, everything redone, just like the South End. Yeah. You know, shishi restaurants in the basements that don't even have prices because, you know, you can't even go in there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I don't know. Part of my theory about crime is, if we're going to do a tangent on that, which is fine, it's percentages, you know, and I've been in some really horrible neighborhoods, but if I think about it, it's like, oh, I was going there for a certain thing. I went right to that thing and left, you know, I wasn't hanging out there. I wasn't living there. So I never got, you know, bothered or hurt really. in some places I'm thinking of. But yeah, if you live there, it's a whole different thing. Every day you go, you know, past the guys that see you go by, and, you know, they get your routine down, and it's like not good. But yeah, that's the thing we started with. What started that riff was Chicago, right? So Rahm Emanuel. So we hear about Chicago being the murder capital of the world, and it just sounds like an insane Southside Chicago sounds like an insane place, but it's based on economic.
It's the murder capital of the world.
I don't know about that. Like the country. I meant to say the country. I'm sorry. So it's like, well, that's all based on like just horrible economic conditions for decades. You know, decades. I've been to Chicago. It is a huge place. You know, we used to have an office in someone's house in North Chicago, Latin King area. You know, and it's just so much. It's such a huge city. You know, such a huge, huge city. And there's
a
lot of people living there, and there's not enough work.
It's more spread out than New York, isn't it? Yeah,
it is more. Well, yes, it is. Yeah, it's more spread out than New York, definitely.
That's why it just looks like a metropolis, like it never ends. Like
yeah, it never ends, and the work that's there is not very convenient,
which is very precarious. It's on a river.
Yeah, it's a river. It's a river. They reverse the direction of the water in.
Well, that water's gonna. Mother Nature's gonna take it back one day.
But even in the '80s, you could see the industry in Chicago disappearing. You know, I'm not making this thing like some liberals do. Industry equals good paying jobs equals stability and so on. You know, it depends on the unionization rate. You could have industry that is like right now. There's a lot of industry in this country paying really bad wages. You know, like car parts factories and stuff where the union used to be part of. Directly owned by one of the car companies that the unions had organized them. Now they busted the unions and they're paying people like $11 an hour, $9 an hour, you know. Even in some of the car plants now, that's happening. Even the unionized car plants where they allow two-tier wages in. However, if there is more jobs out there in industry and so on, and not as far away as they tend to be now, then it's a different deal, you know, for the neighborhoods. And it's really, really harsh. But anyway, Rahm Emanuel and the Democrats in Chicago have more than enough revenue and power to turn that situation around tomorrow if they had any interest in it, and they don't. So it's sad to hear Diane Lewis, the Chicago Teachers Union, starting to suck up to Rahm Emanuel out in Chicago. But anyway, the original point was that what are we talking about here? General strike, May 1st, 2017. Well, yeah, here's another little fun fact you can find out on socialistalternative.org that the Seattle Education Association, I believe it's called, the Teachers Union in Seattle, which had a great victory also within the last couple of years, I think it was last year, they basically passed a resolution in their union that there should be a general strike on May 1st and we should work in the Central Labor Council in Seattle to make this a reality. I mean, I'm paraphrasing, but that's basically what it says. That's amazing. That's great. Then the Minneapolis Nurses Association, or Minnesota Nurses Association, which just had a recent had a couple strikes, I believe, recently, they passed a similar resolution. May 1st, general strike. We should, you know, unions should have meetings and discussions about doing this. Now, whether that will go anywhere is a whole other question. I kind of doubt it will get very far, but what we're getting at in Socialist Alternative, this is the whole point I was leading up to, is. Okay, so this isn't your traditional general strike, unfortunately, which is a good thing to have unions officially say we're going on strike and working together, usually with a political party like in other countries. We don't have that political party here. Democrats aren't going to lead a general strike. So the lack of that political party hurts us very badly, the lack of a left-wing mass political party, a workers' party of some sort. But even so, even given the ground, the territory
not
that we're
even
on,
independents progressive
doesn't exist yet,
or green
doesn't exist yet.
That?
Greens aren't big enough now. So, and the Greens are kind of split. Like, the Greens had an interesting thing happen. Another little tangent, excuse me, but they passed apparently a progressive platform at one of their conventions before the election. And it was, you know, like sort of eco-socialist. It was pretty good, pretty left. From what I heard, I think I might have even glanced at it. And then when Jill Steinman, who you know, we supported and voted for and liked and so on, unfortunately, she didn't really run on that platform, and you didn't hear much about it. And her campaign manager was this guy, Cobb, who I associate with the right wing of the Green Party. And so it was kind of weird that they had this progressive program, and it didn't come out very clearly in the elections at all. And that was a big mistake. That was a big problem. I'm not saying they would have won or anything, but they could have gotten more votes. if she had, like, Sanders hammered away at certain issues all the time. Instead, she made a focus on the unfairness of the electoral system, which is unfair, but you can't get people that interested forever on that issue. There are a certain number of people that get interested in politics based on, hey, they said this was democracy, and it's really not. Look at gerrymandering, look at this, look at that. That's a minority of a minority getting interested in that stuff. What you have to do is really bring people in through concrete demands that will affect their lives immediately, then bring up the other stuff and say, so show how they're related. And, you know, I'm not saying Jill Stein never did that in any of her speeches or whatever. And also her vice president, the vice presidential candidate for the Green Party, Ajamu Baraka, was really good politically. Perhaps I didn't read as many speeches of his or whatever. Perhaps he was better on the issues, but they really, she really made a mistake not hammering home on you know, the eco-socialist, especially the socialist part of that issues. And that could, but anyway, so.
It would be a transitional period.
Yeah, sort of transitional demand type thing, yeah.
Eco-friendliness and the socialist.
Yeah, economy. And it could have been like what you were sort of mentioning just a second ago. If the Greens had gotten more votes, and if they really were moving in a more left direction, then they could have, then that number of votes, even if they were far from winning, could have been a basis for being one part right away of the foundation of a workers' party. Like, they could have had a convention, got more people involved, and then it could have been like, oh, the Greens are interested in forming a left mass workers' party, or at least a significant section of them are.
We would have had them for groups. Something to gravitate, you know, like you said, that
well,
one.
I hope in their whatever state they're in now, I hope they do support this May 1st thing, but yeah, that could have been a byproduct of it. But right now, so we're talking about the sort of left movement, relatively small left movement in the United States, using this term strike more and more based on these partial strikes, not quite general strikes. And we decided in Socialist Alternative that, well, you know, it's good to get this idea out there. And maybe May 1st, with some unions interested in striking, this could become a real thing. So we are pushing that general strike May 1st towards a nationwide strike on May 1st. So let's look at the paper for a second here. Maybe read a couple excerpts from it like we do sometimes. Again, we're looking at Socialist Alternative's new paper, March 2017, issue 31. And it's interesting. There's a Why I'm a Socialist column we like to look at. And usually it's youth. You know, which is fine with me because that's the future and all that. But here we have a guy 70 years old. So let's talk about him.
How
for a second.
Old?
70.
This guy doesn't look 70.
No, he's in good shape. Why I'm a Socialist, Bob Trombley, wow. Cincinnati, Ohio. As I write this, I've just turned 70 years old. I began to self-identify as a socialist in the last year, so my political maturity came late. That's amazing. That's great. I like that. About 15 years ago, I began to pay more attention to our political, economic, and societal ills. Many of us did after 9/11. Now, that's a really good point. We've talked about that on the show before. 9/11 was both scary, but it was one of those moments where it was so basically affecting everyone's life that you had to, some people just sat back and said, wait a minute, things are really messed up.
No,
things are really messed up.
I told you about me and my uncle getting pulled over.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of scary stuff.
And they wanted our papers, yep, and they wanted, yep, you know, had us on the floor. What do you got in the trunk? That kind of stuff. We were leaving, yep, from North Reading.
No, absolutely. It was a moment where reaction kicked in. Right-wingers used 9/11 to try to pull everything to the right. But what I'm trying to say is, and I was afraid of that, and I didn't like it either, and weird stuff happened. But, not weird, but, you know, stuff happened that the right wing caused. But I was surprised to see, number one, it lifted pretty quickly because of the Iraq War. Remember in like 2004?
2003.
When
it started, March.
The big rallies in the beginning against it?
Yeah.
In the beginning. And that died away, but in the beginning. So that cut across the sort of right-wing pressure because people still weren't going to buy the war. In fact, a lot of people didn't see, what's that got to do with 9/11 even, you know? Although it was directly related in terms of how it was used. And then secondly, there was...
And the mushroom cloud scare, ooh.
Yeah.
You know, really.
But then there was also, like, I met young people that got political at that time because they just said, and maybe I'm not saying it very well, they just said, well, things were all of a sudden got really serious and really screwed up, and they wanted to do something about it, and it didn't lead them in a right-wing direction like it did some people. It led them in a left-wing direction. Led them to talk about socialism and think about socialism, which is great.
I remember after that same day, 9/11, I was working at Harvest Co-op in Central Square.
Really? Right, you used to work there? Okay.
Yeah, I was still, and they were cutting hours, and then all of a sudden it just went, we have no more, you know, because everything went down. Like, all of a sudden, economically.
That's funny.
Mm-hmm. You know, there was a job freeze. Put it that way. There was no these help wanted.
Guess what?
I really had to go underground. That's why I was working with my uncle.
Guess what, though? There was already a recession then. A lot of people
prior
didn't realize.
That.
Yeah, it was already out and happening, and they didn't talk about it.
And there was going to be all those protests happening prior to that in Washington, the big marches, remember? Yep.
There was. The anti-globalization marches were
exactly.
huge.
Exactly.
9/11 buried them.
It was actually this guy who was a socialist. That's what he got me into, you know, his thing. He was like this socialist, but he was of some other workers' world or something like mm-hmm. that. And he's like, he's giving me these leaflets. Yeah, come here. You know, then 9/11 happened.
Yep.
And all of a sudden, it's just like...
Yeah, the anti-globalization movement starting around 1999... or maybe 98, continuing
2000.
Through 2000, through 2000, into 2001, then boom. Then they had one more demo after that in Washington. And these were demonstrations. The reason they got the term anti-globalization movement is they would demonstrations would appear wherever the G7, you know, group of seven leading capitalist countries would meet for, you know, to do their dirty planning. And there'd be a big protest there. So it went all over the world, actually. There was also the big one in Seattle, that became known as
the TW something.
Well, it was the
World Trade, or it was against the World Trade Organization.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, exactly. And there was the Teamsters and Turtles together, or something like that, because there was an official union march. Then there was all the youth and everybody out there, and the union leaders tried to like be conservative and keep the movement away from the youth, but a lot of the rank and file union members joined up with the youth. And it became a very powerful protest that actually overwhelmed the cops and became a big, big protest in Seattle, big, big movement. And again, you can look at it like 9/11 buried that, and it did, but it didn't go away totally.
And some of those conversations, people
were radicalized at that time, some people.
Yeah, some of those, like that, when it was just like that same day that it happened right afterwards, like a lot of the conversations I would hear from a lot of the, you know, people around Central Square was like, they hate our way of life because we live free.
9/11, you mean?
Blah, blah, blah.
Well, the first thing I thought
they're
was...
They're going against our right, this and that. Everything's like, oh my God.
Yeah, the first thing I thought was they're going to really use this. My exact words were, they're going to really use this. I actually took the day off from work because somebody was visiting and from Socialist Alternative from another city. We were and things were going well for Socialist Alternative at the time.
You know what I thought of is,
and I just was like, Hitler, they're going to use this.
What happened to the Reichstag when Hitler? You know, when it burnt down, we'll just blame it on the communists.
I mean,
then we'll start just everybody's
but, you know,
rights.
I'm not trying to get into conspiracy stuff because that was one place where people drifted to.
No, I'm saying the first thing that went in my mind was like, oh my God, we're, you know, history, like now it's kind of like I can see where America would go, the civil rights all of a sudden would just start.
Yeah.
We're too much of an open society was some of the stuff I would hear on CNN at the time.
It did ruin, it did bring in stuff we're still suffering from in terms of internal repression in this country that's getting worse. And it did, you know, definitely shove some people to the right, and it did give them an excuse, however stupid, to do more wars in the Middle East. But I'm just trying to make a little point that it had the opposite effect of what I thought as well, that some youth and others just were like, wait a minute, this is so bad that something's got to be wrong with the system. It's not as simple as bad people from the Middle East
versus
everyone
good.
Else. There's got to be something more going on. And they're right. And in fact, the bad people came from Saudi Arabia, which is an ally of the United States, and it's a horrible dictatorship. Anyway, back to Bob Trombley. This is really good. Why I'm a Socialist, New Issue, Social Alternative. So I said many of us paid more attention to politics after 9/11. I learned about the unfolding crises, Bush's wars, the 2008 economic collapse, the wars on drugs and crime. They really were wars on our working class people. I was haunted and disturbed by the prevailing lack of social and economic justice, and I began to look for root causes. I read about neoliberal capitalism, and I came to see it as a syndrome of lethal exploitation. It has become an octopus with its tentacles constricting our economics, our civil life, our government, our value institutions like public education, and even our very psyches. There had to be something better. I came to understand that we need real democracy, that serves the people, and socialism is the path to it. I continue to learn more about socialism, largely through involvement with Socialist Alternative in Cincinnati. And I'm increasingly, this is Ohio, Cincinnati, Ohio, and I'm increasingly encouraged that revolutionary socialism is the only system of political organization that will provide for universal justice, human dignity, preservation of our island planet, and our and true sister and brotherhood. What I've seen from Socialist Alternative in action gives me hope that we can stay on the right path of empowering the working class, of empowering working class people. Now I look around and wonder, where are my fellow radicals from the 60s? There are a few, but I would certainly welcome more. In the meantime, I take heart in working with Socialist Alternative. They are the hope of the world and make me proud to be a socialist. Wow, that's really, really brilliant. That's really nice. Yeah, Bob, very, very articulate. Bob Trombley, T-R-O-M-B-L-E-Y, Cincinnati, Ohio, why I'm a socialist. Now,
he does not look 70.
I know. Then we have also on this page, free, hashtag free Daniel protest in Seattle. ICE detained a Seattle resident, Daniel Ramirez Medina, during as a collateral damage during a raid at his father's home. And in fact, also, if you go to the back page of the paper, big article on immigration rights, Trump prepares mass deportations. We must resist, march, blockade, and strike. And we initiated a protest out in Seattle that with Sharma's leadership, Sharma Sawant's leadership, that led to a occupation for a while of the Seattle airport. And there were other airport protests around the country, including here in Boston, that were quite effective in knocking down that first version of the of Trump's sort of anti-Muslim, anti-immigrant stuff. So
why wasn't Saudi Arabia, I wonder, on that list?
You wonder. Well, it's got something to do with oil and money and
Yeah. Oh, okay. Dialectical materialism. I get it. Okay.
Yeah, there you go.
A little interest there behind that. What's the word? The string to the puppet?
Yeah. Yeah. Big article on resistance in the era of Trump. And one thing I'll one quick thing I'll read from that. We're likely to see, quote, we're likely to see massive mobilizations against the ramping up of mass deportations against the right-wing appointee to the Supreme Court and against Trump's shredding of environmental regulations. The organizers of the Women's March have called for a general strike slash Day Without Women, International Women's Day, March 8th, which we'll get into in a minute, hopefully. April 15th, Tax Day, we'll see actions across the country. There'll be a March for Science on Earth Day, April 22nd. That might be a bigger march than just a March for Science, by the way, and a likely massive environmental march on April 29th. All of this activity could culminate in May Day protests and strike actions on a scale not seen since the Day Without an Immigrant, May 1st, 2006. Socialist Alternative has from the start, called for 100 days of resistance and pointing to the key role of mass nonviolent civil disobedience and strike action, as well as mass demonstrations. So that is, and then it goes on again on the immigrant front, but is attacks on immigrants that, where does this end? Oh, 10. Page 10. Sorry for the paper shuffling here. Just want to get that quote in there because I think it's something we were saying earlier. We'll create the sharpest confrontations. Attacks on immigrants will create the sharpest confrontations, as has already been indicated by the resistance to the Muslim ban. This, however, is only the beginning of attacks on immigrant communities with the expansion of the ICE force and then Border Patrol and widening the net massively for those for who is targeted for deportation. And I think that's still true. I mean, there's obviously any of these attacks from Trump and the resistance to them. They can't stay at a fever pitch at all time. There's lulls, but you know, like today, National Propaganda Radio had a whole, really, for them, a lot of time devoted to the wall thing in Mexico. They even mentioned Obrador in Mexico, you know, the left-wing politician in the Moreno Party, mm-hmm. who is doing well. They claim he's doing well, and then later they say he's not doing as well as he used to do, because he almost won the election. He lost the election by fraud about 6 years ago, was it?
Yep.
And then he lost one by a wider margin. Still, he thought it was fraud, or they thought it was fraud. Now he's running again. And so the story was very contradictory. It was sort of like, well, he's not as popular as he was before, but you never know what's going to happen. And I don't know much. I started to learn more about Moreno and Obrador, and I don't remember a lot of it, but I'm sure there's big holes in what they're doing. But if it is left-wing, you know, that really scares the U.S. big time. They can talk about immigration all they want. What the government's probably focused on right now, what the CIA is probably meddling in, is that election right now. And by the way, isn't it a joke how they keep talking about the Russians dared to get involved in the elections in the United States? All they did was release some documents. I mean, I don't care about Russia or Putin. I mean, we're against Putin and the Russian government. But And I'm not trying to make apologies for them. I'm just saying, like, objectively speaking, they did almost nothing. They did nothing, really. They just released documents and stuff. And people could ignore them or not. And the United States has a record, a well-known track record, of being deeply involved in making sure elections go their way to the point of military coups, the point of installing dictatorships, funding dictatorships, etc.
They were part of the whole 19 army, white armies.
Yeah, yeah. The Russian Revolution started.
Let's get into some historic.
Yes. Yeah. It's the 100th anniversary of the Russian Revolution, right? So 1917. Everyone talks about, the socialist experiment didn't work. Let's think of an experiment where people rush into the lab and smash everything up. That's the kind of experiment we're talking about. And the people smashing everything up was the white army, reinvigorated, resupplied, refunded by 19 imperialist armies invading Russia from the west and taking a big chunk of the country and then rearming and so on and repopulating the white army, then having a vicious, 2.5-year civil war that destroyed an already backward economy, just drove it right into the dust and took the attempts to build socialism that had started and were going, you know, relatively well, and drove them backwards even further. You know, like, the big thing about the way the Russian Revolution is analyzed in this country is you can read all the right-wing propaganda about the Russian Revolution, or liberal propaganda, and they neglect to mention one thing, they neglect to explain one thing. They do mention, of course, but they neglect to explain. What does the word Soviet mean? Soviets, what is that?
Oh, they never explain that.
Council, workers' councils. These became mass organizations of working people and peasants. It means majority. Working people and peasants. And it was a mass movement, the best organized ever against capitalism. And when it won very democratically, very peacefully until the Civil War, relatively speaking, and created this really democratic socialist country. But again, one immediately embargoed economically, one immediately invaded, or almost immediately invaded. It took about a year, I think, to get in there, a year and a half. And then a vicious civil war, and then the economic embargo continues. It's not like they were helped by anybody, you know. Attacks continue underground. That's why they call it the Cold War instead of the Hot War. The Hot War, they withdrew eventually, but the attacks continued. And the propaganda continued, and et cetera, to this day, you know. But then there's other examples, too, historically, where the U.S. just goes in there. I mean, where do you start? I mean, check out the work, Overthrow by Stephen Kinzer.
Guatemala.
There's many of them. There's many Iran. Of them. Books about this, yeah. But that's just what I'm familiar with. Iran, 1953. Egypt. Guatemala was at 54. Arbenz in 54. Indonesia, 64, 65, or 65.
There was a Greece, Cyprus.
1948, was it, in Greece? The CIA, the U.S. military directly sometimes, in terms of Haiti and Dominican Republic and so on. If you go back far, remember Smedley
Cuba,
Butler?
Cuba,
Spanish Civil War, Spanish-American War, what was that? U.S. involved in elections? Are you kidding me? The U.S. has its nose in every election that probably happens on the globe. Even during the Cold War, I read that there was a socialist party in Italy created from scratch by CIA money because they wanted to cut into the power of the Italian Communist Party. So they created the Socialist Party. The most well-known leader was this guy Craxi, and it came out after that party disappeared electorally after it had done its dirty work, pretending to be left and then just supporting capitalism all the time. It came out like in the 90s, I think it was, that it was like a complete creation of the CIA. It was like really funded by the CIA to get going and to maintain itself in Italian politics.
So they would go mingling with the politics and get people thinking, oh, these guys are socialists. There aren't
mingle's too nice a word. they go in there and they fund it. They fund opposition parties. They corrupt union leaders. They'll do whatever they need to do with the money, with the influence. I mean, they invite a certain number of bourgeois, you know, upper middle, upper class people from the rich, from the capitalist class, to their Harvards and their Yales and all that to train them up early, get them young to become, when they go back, hopefully they're going to be like conservative or liberal politicians in their countries against whatever the whatever they want them to be against, usually socialism, but also other things as well. And yeah, it's a whole thing that they're constantly meddling in other countries, constantly. And that's also too nice a word for it. Constantly screwing over other countries.
Indonesia.
For U.S. interests.
That was
right?
Even more.
As they define them.
Indonesia.
Indonesia 65, mass genocide triggered by
Burma.
By the CIA, by Kissinger and all that. Vietnam, who can forget? You know, all the fake elections in Vietnam. I mean, the America, and to see every night on the news this laughable stuff about America, American democracy and values being undermined by Russia, is so hypocritical. So hypocritical that anyone that, you know, if we had a mass workers' party in this country, if we had a left. Really left journalism of a real size, you know, of real impact, people would be laughing their butts off all over the country the minute someone opened their mouth about something like that. They say, what about this, 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 and this? Are you kidding me? And instead, people are like, oh, yeah, Russia, really bad what they're doing to us, you know? Whereas if you look at a map of Russia, again, this is not an apology for Putin and the Russian government. It's a capitalist government. We don't like it. We organize against it. But
and they're oppressing their communists.
Putin said the worst thing that ever happened to Russia was the Russian Revolution. Yeah, he would say that because he's representing the capitalists, you know. It was the best thing that ever happened in the world. And then, basically, you've got... but right now, if you look at a map of Russia, a military map, let's say, that points out NATO bases, U.S. Army bases, versus Russian bases, Russia's encircled by the U.S. and NATO. It's encircled.
Well, they had a couple naval... close encounters last year during the...
Yeah. Well, they probably have a lot of them.
During the... well, and they were trying to make it seem like, oh, they're, you know... No, they're in there... Actually, if you were to put a cruiser in the Boston Harbor from Russia, wouldn't we react the same way? Wouldn't we send our F-16 scrambling right away?
Absolutely.
So, what is he doing? Sending some MiGs to, you know, check out what's going on? Why are they so close to our Black Sea or whatever they were?
Yep. Well, you know, I want to get into why we should strike on May Day, an article by Shama Sawant, right next to unions, locals pass resolutions to back up what we were talking about earlier. But why don't we take a quick break? Is that all right? Is that okay with you? Yeah. Take a quick break. We're going to listen to a song that I usually save for the end of the show. We're gonna do it straight up here. Maybe put on two things. And you're listening to Socialist Alternative Radio from Tufts Educational Radio, also known as Tufts Freeform Commercial Free Community Based Radio. That's a little thing I made up for it. I don't know if the commercial free gets talked about much. But thank goodness. I'm getting really, you know, you'd think I would be used to commercials, right? I grew up in the 60s and 70s watching TV with commercials all the time. Then I had this period where I didn't watch any TV. And it's come back now. Now we have regular TV, although it doesn't come in very well. And the commercials are just killing me, man. They're just killing me. I'm seeing my kids watch them. I'm like watching them, and I'm just like, "This is how does people stand for this?" You got like Bill Clinton's administration got rid of all the rules about television, just about the ones that you had to have children's programming, the ones that you had to have only a certain limit, you know, only a certain number of commercials per hour, certain number of minutes.
That was less commercials.
So now
we
have infomercials. Which is a whole hour of commercials. There's no real show. And then you have whatever they think that people, the market will bear in terms of commercials, right?
You know what DirecTV does? When you don't pay your bill, they'll give you about like a month and a half of certain channels. But everything else will just be until you pay your bill.
Yeah.
And the ones that will only be available are those infomercial channels and the evangelical religious channels.
Yeah.
But there's only one channel that's there. That's Link TV. At least they give me that one. That left on the dial.
Well, you know, there's people listening. They're like, "What's wrong with you? Don't you know the technology to get rid of commercials from TV shows and all that?" And blah blah blah. Yes, I'm aware of it. But you also have to buy that stuff, and you know, whatever. I'm just saying, there's a certain number of people like myself that. Well, I was just fine with just having a DVD player hooked up to a TV with no TV access.
That's what I do.
Then I got TV access, and it's just so horrible. It's just so horrible people go through that because not everyone's going to be able to axe out the commercials. And they're finding technologies to get rid of the technologies that get rid of the commercials, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, we're going to take a quick musical interlude here on Socialist Alternative Radio, talk and music from a working class democratic socialist perspective. You're here with Jeff and Diego, and we're going to introduce you to, we've probably heard of this individual, Mr. John Lennon and Imagine.
sky. Imagine all the people living for today. Imagine there's no countries. It isn't hard to do. Nothing to kill. Imagine no possessions. I wonder if you can. No need for greed or hunger. A brotherhood.
Yeah, that was John Lennon with Imagine, and that's a theme song of ours here at Socialist Alternative Radio, and we're going to get back into talking about May 1st and the possibilities of a general strike here in the United States, or something akin to a general strike, something maybe like a general strike, but something that will have some impact.
We want France to be like, finally.
Yeah, as part of the anti-Trump resistance movement, and I can call it a movement, I think, based on all that's happened so far.
Did you hear about the British people voted for when Trump gets, they didn't want Trump coming to visit?
Yeah.
That was brilliant.
That was really brilliant. And I hope he doesn't visit. But
we were talking about that the other day. I found out about that at the church, and there was this one reactionary guy. Good, we don't need Britain. That's the whole reason why we got him out of here in the first place.
I had to shake my head.
You're so lucky we're in church, because, you know, I like to say a couple words that, you know, might disrespect the dean up front.
What church was that?
It was a Baptist church over at Hampshire Street by Public Works.
What were you doing there?
Eating, because, six, you know.
Yeah, the church, they had a soup kitchen. They had a food. They had food, yeah. Food pantry or whatever, yeah.
Well, one thing about Cambridge, you don't go hungry if you know the schedules and who's what, who's doing what at what day. And
you got to move around, though, right?
Yeah,
go from one church to another.
Here, Jeff, I'm not even lying to you, and I'm showing you. You're my witness.
Yeah.
I'm going to a meal at 4 o'clock today by Davis.
Which one? Which church?